and welcome to the People's Game on the third day of the 2010 Men's World Cup Soccer Tournament in South Africa. I'm Alan Minsky, and on today's show, we're going to hear from Omar Varela, who talks about some of the Latin American sides that will be taking the field in the next few days. In particular, we'll hear about Honduras, Chile, and Paraguay. Before that, we'll be talking to Nick Green, and we'll get Nick's reflections as a British national who follows the USA men's team, his thoughts on yesterday's USA-England match, how it looks in Group C, and who he thinks looks strong in the tournament to date. And first off, we're going to be talking with Jennifer Doyle, and Jennifer Doyle is going to be talking about something that caught her eye during the Ghana-Serbia match, the sign that said, Sex Machine. Stay tuned. Jennifer Doyle, welcome to the People's Game. Jennifer Doyle, of course, is the blogger behind the great blog From a Left Wing.
Hi, Alan. It's great to talk with you again. I just wanted to speak a little bit about watching the game between Serbia and Ghana this morning. Ghana, as everyone should know by now, won. They're the youngest side in the World Cup to ever play, and they had a great game. But I noticed in the background a banner that said Sex Machines and got into a conversation with other people on Twitter, tweeting the game, wondering about what this sign stood for. So with a little bit of research, I came up with two possibilities. One was that it stood for, that it was maybe perhaps brought by fans from Hamburg. The Hamburg team, football team, has a fan club called Sex Machines. But this seemed like a stretch. Far more likely is that it's a sign from or declaring affection for the team from fans of Rough and Smooth, a Ghanaian pop group. And they're extremely popular in Ghana, and I think they actually won a big award in the Ghana Music Awards in 2010. You can see some fantastic live performance from them. And the song is really lively and very catchy. It's called Sex Machine, obviously a reference to the James Brown song. And this led me to think about music. And the ESPN broadcast that I've been watching, the opening track is, well, it's strangely reminiscent of The Lion King. And a few people, bloggers and tweeters, have been commenting on this jokingly. Well, I thought I would look up where this song comes from. And as it happens, the song was composed by a guy from Utah, a Mormon composer, I believe, and his name is Leslie Moore. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his first name correctly, and he's worked with ESPN for a long time. And he, in crafting this song, it seems as though he wasn't terribly familiar with African music, as he says in an article that I used as sort of the source for my material on my blog from the Salt Lake Tribune, that he was researching African music on iTunes to, quote, see what I was up against, end quote. And in this article, they say that all of the musicians are local musicians from Utah, with the exception of an African choir. But reading on that article, it turns out, and this is really incredible, by African choir, what they really mean is the Broadway cast of The Lion King. So I was sort of stunned by this. I think I was actually kind of screaming at my computer as I was reading this with kind of a blogger sort of glee, like you just can't make this stuff up. Because ESPN, in trying to come up with an African sound, in essence, for the theme music, actually sort of, in a way, outsources the music from South Africa, which would seem like the logical place to begin in thinking of the music which might score the World Cup, to the U.S. And to Utah, no less, which I think is, I'm going to venture to say, is one of the least African states in the United States, but perhaps there's some Utah folks who would disagree with me.
No, I think that's correct.
Yeah, so that's pretty much all that I have today, which is just a sort of gesture towards what I think might be a larger project for me as a writer during the World Cup, researching actually the interaction between African musicians and the World Cup, because I've actually learned recently that a few contemporary artists have actually engaged the World Cup quite aggressively in their music, and which makes perfect sense. So hopefully I'll get to talk to you a little bit later in more detail about what that sounds like.
You know, one of the things about these broadcasts is, of course, soccer is so fantastic in that for 40 6 to 48 minutes. There's no interruptions. Of course, we have little logos in the corners, but it's not like, you know, basketball, American football, baseball, where they break and have these long commercial breaks, 3, 4, 5 minutes. The game just flows. But the few shots of the Ghana fans were just fantastic, I thought.
Yeah.
They were some, I just wish I had seen more. And of course, they can't really break away and show them during the game. Just the absolute euphoria, delight, and fun that was being had there was really great to see. And thank you so much, Jennifer Doyle.
You're welcome.
And we will again be talking to you in the coming days here on The People's Game. This is The People's Game, and I'm Alan Minsky, and I'm speaking with Nick Green. Nick Green, of course, is the blogger behind 100% Soccer, a great soccer blog. And Nick is also somebody who is very knowledgeable about the USA men's team. He's based near Carson, where the USA team trains, and he happens to be from England. So yesterday must have been a day in which he had a sense of personal conflict. Nick, how was it for you yesterday?
Yes, well, I was actually pleased with the end result, the 1-1 tie. I've spent most of my life in the US, but I was born in England, so that pretty much evened things out for me. I wasn't exactly happy with the way the result occurred, as you might imagine. Robert Green not only shares a last name with me, he is the former goalkeeper for my favorite English team, Norwich City, which is where I grew up. I just really, really felt sorry for poor Robert Green. Flashed around the world, the hand of Clod, they're calling it today in the British tabloids. Just really, really feel for a guy who made that horrible, horrible, horrible mistake. Having said that, any 9-year-old AYSO goalkeeper knows that you've got to get your body behind the ball for precisely that reason, if for some reason it goes through your hands. And he didn't. So he's only got himself to blame.
Well, as it turns out, today the goaltender for Algeria had a pretty high-profile lesson in front of him about getting his body behind the ball, and he hadn't learned it yet. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Yeah, it was an incredible howler, as they say, and I think it would have been a lot of fun to be in the editorial meeting of the Sunday Mirror as they came up for what their headline was going to be. They, along with News of the World, settled upon Hand of Clod. But England, I thought, looked really uneven.
Yes, I did too. I read this morning that Fabio Capello, the coach, only told his players a couple of hours before kickoff who was going to be starting. And, you know, it really, really looked that way. They just looked, as you pointed out, disjointed. Where was Wayne Rooney for the bulk of that game?
Well, he had demerit. He was wearing demerit like a glove.
And that was amazing, too. You would just not think that a player as pacey as we know Wayne Rooney is could be kept under control so well by these two relatively immobile U.S. centre-backs. And I'm not sure that it was the job they did on him or it was the job he did on himself. But for whatever reason, he really didn't get free and do much damage. We didn't really see much of him until the second half. And England just generally looked kind of as they have on quite a few occasions under Fabio Capello, just a bit on the tepid side. I mean, Glenn Johnson, he was one of the attacking highlights? Really? A defender? Glenn Johnson? I mean, it was a very strange, unconvincing performance by England, no doubt about it.
Well, I thought for all the attention on Heskey, he himself did an all right job. But the idea that they are running everything through him is so uncreative, denies them flow as they move the ball up the field. So I'm baffled by the strategy right now that Capello seems to be adopting. And certainly, at any rate, Capello has a lot on his plate all of a sudden. With Ferdinand out, King gets taken out halfway through. They end up with Carragher in the back line, who looks like he's clearly lost a step from a few years ago. And now they have a situation on the left side where Barry is out and Milner might be under the weather for another few days.
And wasn't he horrible to start the game? I mean, no wonder James Milner got pulled. Yeah, I mean, there's a combination of Fabio Capello creating his own problems here with, as you point out, some rather baffling decision-making. But the players aren't exactly responding and helping him out either. So, kind of an underwhelming performance. You know, very sharp contrast to what we saw from Germany this morning, if you were watching.
Sure.
Of course, England's opponents didn't look all that good either, did they? I mean, they were very lucky themselves, the Americans, to be on the receiving end of such a gift from Mr. Green.
Well, I thought actually the guy who got the goal was one of the people who didn't really perform up to par. I thought Donovan had a number of nice plays where he clearly has a great touch in terms of service, and he sees the field beautifully. Altidore missed a header. I thought that Finley was, to me, something of a revelation. I thought he played a nice game. And at various times, other players stepped up. I thought they were in something of a defensive shell playing a counterattack game. And I thought Bradley occasionally was on the ball and showed what he'll be worth when they're not in such a defensive shell. I actually thought the team came off looking better than I expected, given the context.
Well, I started out in a bad mood because I didn't agree with the lineup, initial lineup. I wanted to see Torres in there because of his very impressive performance in the last warm-up game, the way he was holding the ball, dictating the flow, the pace of the midfield. And so I was very upset that Torres didn't get the start. Instead we saw Ricardo Clark. And up front, you liked former Galaxy striker Robbie Finley. And, you know, I know the thought process of Bob Bradley. I know he was going, okay, we need to counter the English pace, the English speed, the English work rate. I'll put a quick young guy like Finley up front with Altidore, and I'll have a hard-working guy like Clark in midfield. But I don't think that's the way you handle England. I think the way you handle England and counter England's strengths is by playing a more technical, possession-oriented game. And I think that if Torres had been then there, they would have had more of that kind of build-up in the midfield. And if we're picking players like he apparently has been on the basis of their recent form, where was Edson Buttle? Where was Hercules Gomez? Why did Buttle come on so late? Why didn't he start? Why was Gomez on? I mean, did he even get in the game?
I'm not sure if he officially registered. That was the final. To defend the selection of Finley, first of all, I wasn't that familiar with him, and I saw him have some nice touches. But I think it simply is because, you know, there's King. It's true that actually England has pace on the wing fullbacks with Ashley Cole and Glenn Johnson. So you aren't going to blow by them with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the possibility of isolating somebody who can just run by people when King is one of the defenders, Terry doesn't have all that much pace in the middle. And then the last part of the game, once Carragher was in the game and he had a card, albeit it was Altidore who blew by him, but Buttle doesn't have that kind of speed. So I thought that was the logic behind the selection of Findlay.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Exactly right. But I'm still not convinced that that was the way to go, and I think we should see some lineup changes for the next game. And of course, there is a big doubt about Tim Howard, so that's a bit of a worry at the moment. I don't think they've given him X-rays or anything yet, but he took a knock there, right, in the ribs, and there's some talk that he could have broken ribs. So we'll see what's going on there.
Well, fortunately, they have depth at that position. I watched Slovenia and Algeria today. Had it been a draw, which was looking like it was going to be a draw, would have been a very positive result for England and USA. However, the goalie in Algeria let a terrible ball in. Only a few minutes earlier, a red card was handed out to an Algerian substitute who got two yellows very quickly. The second one was just an atrocious play, just stuck his hand up with a ball that was going out of bounds for no, I don't know how the hell he thought he was going to get away with that. And Algeria had been solid, and Slovenia had been really no better than they had been, but the way that Slovenia had proceeded in the match, their great amount of discipline, the type of side I really worry about the USA being able to break down. And I do think that Buttle will be key, and I hope that Buttle plays, because I've seen some of his performance over the last month, and he's the type of player who can is dangerous now at quite a distance and in the middle of the box. I do think America will have a great amount of the play against Slovenia, but Slovenia is a dangerous side. They're very well organized, and they know each other very well. So the fact that they're on top of the table right now in Group C, it's a little bit foreboding, I think, for the American side, that's their next match too. So this next match is absolutely, again, quantum for Team USA. And as for England, they do have the difficulty now of playing a side Algeria that obviously will be out of the tournament if they lose.
So, right. So is the pressure on them to a greater extent than it is on the U.S., do you think?
Well, I think for what it's worth, while, again, I was a little happier with the USA performance than you were, I think England is still a more talented side. They should be able to dominate Algeria. Mm-hmm. I don't see how they won't be able to. But again, I mean, what's up with King? I mean, if you have Carragher starting in the back, what's up with Milner? Who the heck had started left back? That really didn't do much for them with the two guys on either wing. And again, but Algeria I didn't see as being able to seriously challenge. I actually saw the African Nations Cup, and they had the same goalie in net, Algeria, and the guy made all sorts of errors then too. So unfortunately, it doesn't seem like they have anybody to fall back on in goal. And that's a real Achilles heel for Algeria, much more so than Robert Green. By the way, do you think that your namesake will be in goal?
No, you think? I don't see how you can leave that poor guy in goal. I mean, he's just, you need to give him some time off after the trauma of this experience.
Yeah, I expect to see James.
Yeah, and like in Calamity James, we've got somebody who we know is quite capable of doing just what Mr. Green just did anyway. So if that's any consolation for England fans.
I do like Joe Hart a lot, but I would worry about with all the focus on the possibility of an English goalkeeper making another howler, you know, you don't want to put a young guy in there in that kind of context. And they haven't had luck with that recently anyway.
Right. Well, I do think that on Friday when Slovenia plays the U.S. and England plays Algeria, it's interesting that the Slovenia-U.S. game is on before the England-Algeria game.
True.
And I think that will be very helpful for England just to know what's going on there.
Well, I think the pressure on them to pull 3 points is exceptional. But the way now that the second set of first-round games play and the order they play, of course, is very important. After all, the third set of first-round games, now they all get played simultaneously. Turning away from Group C, what have you been impressed with? Obviously, Germany today, but what else has caught your attention?
Well, Germany, I think, was the story of today. I mean, I should think, whether you're an American or whether you're English, you want to be quaking in your boots about Germany. I mean, for all the talk that we have had about, this young German team and their problems up top with Klose, and those two strikers came through for Germany today. They did not have the issues that everybody has been talking about. You know, Podolski didn't have a great season with Cologne. But those guys looked very, very good for Germany and both England and the U.S. It's absolutely imperative, I think, that they avoid that nation.
Well, they're a very non-cynical side. I mean, they don't go into any kind of defensive shell. They get a lead and they keep going right at you. They went at Australia hard throughout the entire match.
And they should do, because that you want to send a message, you want to pile up the goals. And Australia, while they were an experienced team, is certainly not among the class teams, the class nations of this tournament. So Germany did exactly what they should have done. And if I was Fabio Capello, if I was Bob Bradley, I would be figuring out all the permutations here to avoid Germany in that first game. But then again, Serbia and Ghana was kind of an interesting matchup, with Ghana coming through with that wonderfully emotional goal, and Serbia, the conventional wisdom was that the U.S. would face Serbia, may now get a crack again at an old rival, Ghana, who we last saw 4 years ago, of course, in the World Cup. That'll be interesting.
And it's significant that Serbia, now Germany does have a tough match, and that they have a very solid Serbian side, and it's of note that Ghana did score their goal with Serbia down a man. And it was odd, actually. Serbia were their most concerted period threatening the goal was after they lost the player, but then a real terrible handball. Ghana got the goal, but it wasn't an undeserved victory.
No.
I mean, Ghana played very well throughout the match as well. I thought both sides were playing quite well at times.
Yeah.
But with Germany today, Serbia is really going to have to pull it together to take on Germany. There's a lot of talent on the Serbian side, but I don't think there was any evidence there that could take on Germany. And I bring that up because that's their next pairing, and Ghana plays Australia. So this group, which was sort of considered the second group of death, could be resolved after the second set of matches there. Now, moving forward to tomorrow's matches, we have Holland against Denmark, Japan against Cameroon, and Italy against Paraguay. The first two matches are in Group E. What do you see there?
Well, I'm looking forward to the Holland-Denmark game. That should be a great game between two European rivals. I've always liked Holland for their, ever since 1974 with their total football style. And I'm always pulling for the Netherlands to play well in a World Cup. They never seem to. It's one of the great national frustrations there. So I'm very much looking forward to that game. And, of course, Denmark, former European champions. So you don't know. That should be a really fascinating matchup.
Cameroon, a good chance to another African side to win a match against Japan tomorrow. And then Italy-Paraguay, the first match in Group F. The rest of the group includes Slovakia and New Zealand. Considered an easy group for Italy, but this first match, a tough match against Paraguay.
Well, I'm going to bow to your superior knowledge about Italy. I'd like to know what you think about Italy taking on the South Americans.
I don't even know who I'll root for. I'm a lifelong partisan of the Azzurri, and I'm so dismayed by the selections. But, you know, you get 23 Italians on a side. It's the World Cup. They've won it four times. I'm actually expecting to be pleasantly surprised by Italy, at least in terms of the style of play, the flow of the play. I think Lippi will have the team together. So many people are missing. It's not a team of superstars. But the problem herein is that Paraguay is a very, very solid side, and I believe we'll be hearing a detailed analysis of the Paraguayan side later in the show with Omar Varela. Lastly, then, the temperature of the tournament so far, it's been a lot of fun. Is your schedule adjusting to wake up here in Southern California at 4:30 in the morning?
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble with those 4:30 games. I think I'm getting a little old here. How's your stamina doing just this few days into the tournament?
I have this thing where I wake up for the 4:30 game and I don't take any coffee, so I sort of dream through it. It's like I'm in a soccer dream. And it's working for me. It's working very well. But it sounds to me like you're going to be committed to getting up for the Dutch game tomorrow, and that should be a lot of fun. And have you heard anything about Robin and whether he won't be playing tomorrow? I don't.
He's not playing. Right. No, he's not. He's out. We don't know how long he's out for, but it doesn't really look good for him for the rest of the tournament. He's definitely not going to play.
So they're a 22-man side. So they've lost the player.
Yeah, and not just a player. I mean, he was improving rapidly for the Dutch, you know.
Oh, unbelievable player. I mean, you know, everything that Messi did to try to get the ball in the net, all of the coming in from the right side with the left foot curving the ball into the corner, obviously Messi's a spectacular player, nothing against Leo Messi here, but Robin does do the same thing with considerable more velocity on the shot and more poignancy on the shot, and they beat the goalie. The goalie's hands haven't been getting to him these past few months. I thought he's been the world offensive player for the last 2 months, and it's an incredible blow to the Dutch chances. Even as of the 2:08 Euros, he had a spectacular tournament, and then he missed the game against Russia. I ran into some Dutch people, and I said, you know, you guys have the greatest player in the world who never plays.
He really has been doing, I think I would agree with you that you could make a case for the statement of him as one of the best attacking players in the world the last couple of months. He has really gone improved by leaps and bounds ever since leaving Chelsea. I'm wondering if the technical nature of the game over there in Germany, his club side is Bayern Munich, if that, you know, just really does suit him a little bit more than the more frenetic English game, which is a kind of funny thing to say when he's such a speedy guy, but he's become so technically proficient that, that's going to be a huge loss to the Dutch.
Well, again, they'll still probably be pretty strong, and I'm hoping he can somehow heal and come back because he is an absolute delight to watch. Anyway, Nick Green, we'll be talking to you again throughout the tournament. The blog is 100% soccer. Check it out. Nick Green, thank you so much for joining us on The People's Game.
You are quite welcome, Alan.
This is The People's Game, and I am Alan Minsky, and right now I am speaking to independent journalist Omar Varela and a huge soccer fan, one of the most knowledgeable people that I've spoken to about the Latin American sides in this year's World Cup. And I just wanted to catch Omar on the fly today and look a little bit forward to some of the games in the next few days, starting off with Italy and Paraguay tomorrow, but also looking forward to a match with Honduras and Chile. All three of these sides, Paraguay, Honduras, and Chile, are sides that not a lot's known about by a lot of soccer fans around the world. So I want Omar to tell us a little bit about them. And let's start off with Paraguay playing the defending world champions, Italy. I have been a lifelong partisan of the Italian side. I am certainly nonplussed about this year's Italian side. And I sense that Paraguay could give them quite a game. And that game is the late game on Monday tomorrow.
Yeah, Alan, thanks for having me on. Hope I can share a little bit of my passion for the game and have some people kind of maybe agree or disagree with some of my views. I think Paraguay is a strong team. It is a young, very determined side. Led the CONMEBOL during the qualifying stages for just about the entire qualification round. And have a young striker playing out in Germany. His name is Lucas Barrios. And Lucas started for Colo-Colo, led the Chilean tournament for 2 years before his move to Borussia Dortmund in the Bundesliga. Recently obtained his Paraguayan citizenship, so he's going to be a big threat for the Italian defense. They play a very strong defensive game. Paulo da Silva, one of their leading defenders, played on the Mexican side for Pumas many years and now switched the side over to playing in the EPL. He's a strong captain, commands his line very well, and the Italians are going to be in trouble once if Paraguay happens to sneak an early goal in. They're going to shut down like a clam, and it's very hard to break this team apart. The Brazilians had an absolutely difficult time with them, both games in Paraguay and in Brazil. They are a typical South American side. Once they score, fall back, and it's nearly impossible to break this defensive line that Paraguay sends out on the pitch. But with the playmakers like Pirlo or any of these Italians, it'll be a good match. I think it'll be a good test to see the strongest side in the CONMEBOL South American versus the last world champion. So, yeah, it should make for an exciting match.
Right, and I'm not sure of the injury report with Andrea Pirlo. He may be there tomorrow, but I'm suspecting he won't be. So he's really the one player on the side from the 2006 team that really could break down tight defenses. He has a fantastic sense of the field. The other player from 2006 who's uncanny at that is Francisco Totti. He's not on the Italian side, something of a controversial exclusion. So then let's look forward to the final group, Group H, which includes not only one of the prohibitive favorites, Spain, and then there's Switzerland, but two sides from Latin America that, again, many global soccer fans know very little about. Let's talk about Chile first and then Honduras. Chile, because they're perhaps a team that's really floating beneath the radar screen. People think very highly of them. So there's some people's choice as a sleeper for the tournament, and people know very little about the side. Omar, I've heard you talk about it very informatively, so please illuminate the listeners of the People Game about Chile.
Thank you so much. I agree 100% with you, Alan. I believe Chile is one of the sides that many people just may or may not even know where the country is. We all know the disaster, the earthquake that took place in the country a couple of months ago. I think it's really pushed and motivated their team. They call La Roja in their host country. Like I said, it's another one. It's a very young team. Marcelo Bielsa and his World Cup leadership experience has managed to plant one of the strongest sides in the South American game. Look out, you know, you got names like Mark Gonzalez, this fantastic left halfback. And, well, David Suazo, their star striker's out. He won't be playing the tournament. He's got an injury. But at the same time, they're a very fast-paced team, a team who touches the ball well. They manage their spaces extremely well. Be careful with their flanks down the sides. He's an Argentino trainer, so he's a man who likes to open up the field and use every millimeter of it. Look for the balls up the line, down into the corner, switch into the inside, and their guys, Jean Bossejour, an outstanding halfback, can take a strike from about 30, 40 yards out, put it right on the goal. And it's a young, motivated team. They were minutes, seconds away from beating the Brazilians down in Salvador, Brazil, a couple of months ago in their last of the qualifying stages. And Dunga's Brazil actually had quite a tough time breaking their defensive scheme. So Honduras is definitely one of the lesser known sides, I believe, of the tournament, only participating in their second World Cup finals, I believe. But given any set piece anywhere near around the top of the box, their star guy, go-to man, Julio Cesar Rambo de León, don't give him the opportunity. So I think it'll be a good game. The Hondurans have a lot of European experience, and definitely will make for a back and forth, fast-paced style of game. And I think, you know, the world crowd will be in for a nice spectacle with these two sides.
You know, I'm actually a fan of the British Premiership side, Wigan Athletic, that's getting a tremendous amount of American exposure right now because their manager, Roberto Martinez, is doing commentary for ESPN. The Honduran side is very well represented in recent years on Wigan Athletic. The maybe most prominent Honduran player in the British Premiership, Wilson Palacios,
who's
is a holding midfielder, a very, very solid force in the center of the field for Tottenham Hotspurs, where he moved after he made his reputation at Wigan. And then the Wigan also has Maynor Figueroa and as well Thomas, who play for the Honduran national team. So it's an odd thing for me, though. It's a team, of course, that I have a lot of affection for because these players have been playing for my favorite British Premiership side. But at the same time, I have great ambiguity towards the Honduran team because of the political situation in the country and the ways in which traditionally in Latin America, right-wing basically dictatorships or non-democratic governments have taken advantage of the successes of their national soccer sides. And, of course, we had a sort of a throwback old-style coup that we hadn't seen for quite a while, at least not a successful one in Latin America, in Honduras. What are your maybe just final thoughts right now, Omar? Anything about the way that the Honduran national team is playing out within that political context?
Like the Cote d'Ivoire a couple of years ago, they have a tough political situation going on at home, and for a lot of these players, often seen as ambassadors of their country and of their flag. I hope at least that they'd be able to put, you know, show face for their home country, and not only for their country, but for Central Latin America as a whole, and just be able to kind of push aside any political or, you know, external factors that contribute to how they're gonna perform on the pitch, show to the world that although there are problems going on at home, they'll be able to come out onto the pitch, put on a great game, and compete with the world's best.
Well, thank you so much, Omar Varela, and we'll be touching base with you in the coming days again as the tournament moves forward. Lastly, what do you think the temperature of the tournament so far? Has it gotten off to a good start?
It's gotten off to a good start. A little slow. I think there were a lot of butterflies in these early games, particularly in the opener and perhaps in the England-USA match. But as the tournament progresses, we have had a good game from Germany today, another one of the powerhouses. The crowds are starting to get a little bit more into it, and there's more media coverage. So, yeah, I'd hope to see the tournament really take off and take it to the next level.
Of course, in the coming days, now that Germany sort of has set a mark with finally an offensive explosion from one side, we do have the Netherlands, Brazil, and Spain debuting in the coming days. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on The People's Game, Omar Varela.
Thank you so much.
And that's our show for today, short and sweet on this Sunday, the third day of the 2010 Men's World Cup Soccer Tournament. I'm Alan Minsky, and thanks to Jennifer Doyle, Omar Varela, Nick Green, and Fernando Ramiro. We'll be back tomorrow.
Will get that chance.